Special Edition, Talking Communities, Blind Cool Tech, June 6th, 2006.
Blind Cool Tech, where fun.
Well, I wanted to play with podcast stuff, okay?
Technology,
the world,
is anybody there? And blindness.
Ah, God, who put that wall there?
And all come together.
Hey y'all, how you doing? I'm Larry Skutkan, your host for this special edition of a joint cast between Talking Communities and Blind Cool Tech. I am recording this cast, by the way, on a new Edirol R9 digital recorder with the Church Audio mics, and we're about to talk about how to create podcasts. And there's several parts to that, so let's talk about the recordings first. Since we are talking about digital recorders, you can create your content in a number of different ways. Some people are even using cassette tapes and then digitizing that cassette on the PC, which essentially involves running a patch cord from your aux out on your recorder or your earphone to your line in on your sound card and recording it. Probably what more people are doing nowadays, though, is using a digital recorder of some kind. And the kind of digital recorder you select depends on a number of factors. I can recommend a few of them that we've used personally. Probably one of the better ones that's very inexpensive, unfortunately it's a discontinued one now, is the iRiver IFP 899. This is a unit that comes with a gig of RAM, and it's one of the few MP3 players with decent recording capabilities. It's got some pretty nice features too as far as the microphone slash line in jack goes, so the recorder can detect whether you're using a level from a microphone or a line in and adjusts itself automatically. You can set the levels on the IFP 899. And really, for the price of this, you probably should be able to get one for around $100. It is a decent recording. And I think if you want to hear a recording that was made on the iRiver IFP 899, probably one of the better ones that we made on the Blind Cool Tech podcast was one that a friend of mine, Kenny Mitchell, and I did at a haunted house. So look around October 30th or 31st of 2005, and this one was actually recorded with two different recorders, so it'll be a good comparison. One was the iRiver IFP 899, the other was the Olympus DS2. Now, I will warn you that the iRiver requires a firmware update to get it to show up as a drive, which you really want to do. And its maximum, once that firmware update is installed, its maximum bit rate on the recording, it records directly to MP3, is 96 kbps. So it's not the highest quality recording in the world, but take a listen to that one and you'll get an example of what you can do with it. Other digital recorders can be had from Olympus, Sony, Philips. I personally am familiar only with the Olympus ones, though. The Olympus ones, no doubt, are much easier to use than the iRiver. One of the things that makes the Olympuses particularly nice is that they have a built-in speaker. The current model of Olympus is the WS320M. Actually, the 300 series. The 320 comes with a gigabyte of RAM. And this series of recorders gives you carefree recording. Their highest sample rate is 64 kbps, so you won't get quite as high a quality of recording as you do with the Olympus, but the ease of use is so much better. Also, the thing that you may not like on the Olympus recorders is that you cannot shut off the automatic gain control, so you can't really set the levels. The Olympus is one of those recorders that's made to give you a decent recording no matter what you do, but never an outstanding one no matter what you do. So you can listen to some samples on the Blind Cool Tech website, where we recorded with the WS320M. One thing you want to make sure is that you set it in the less sensitive mode. That would be the dictation setting rather than the conference setting, or you get way too much gain, too much pumping going on as it tries to decide what you want to record. That is if you're in an outside environment. You know, and it may be if you want to record a conference, you may want to try out the conference setting. I've found that just for recording ambient noises and general characteristics, it is better to keep that unit on the dictation setting. Now, what you want to do, if you want to make some good binaural recordings, you'll want to augment your Olympus or your iRiver with some probably binaural microphones. Sound Professionals is a good place to start for looking at microphone choices. If you look on the frequently asked questions section of blindcooltech.com, I believe we've got listed the microphone model numbers that we have used in the past. And there are different kinds of microphones. Some that go in your ear, which do block your hearing a little bit. Some that hook over your ear. And some that just use clips. Before we get off the digital recorder discussion, though, we should talk about the little bit higher-end digital recorders. That Olympus, by the way, is around a $200 product. It is currently still in production. It does also have stereo built-in mics, and they're decent quality. They're all right. You could insert some audio here from a recording made with the built-in mics on the WS320M. In fact, one of the things that you'll notice once you get past the digital recorder, the small, I call these really the dictation machines. They're really made, like I say, to get you a decent recording no matter what you do. There's three higher end digital recorders that sell in the $300 to $400 price range. And those are the Edirol R1. It is a little bit bigger. Probably not something that you would want to put in your pocket. There is the M-Audio MicroTrack. And that's the one I've been using for many of my sound seeing tours. And you know, it makes a higher than average recording. It makes a decent recording. You can listen to some of the sound seeing tours we've done with the MicroTrack, and these walks I do to and from work, many of them are done with the MicroTrack. This particular one is done with the third of the higher end digital recorders, the Edirol R9. That's E-D-I-R-O-L. Those are made, you can get more information from RolandUS.com. The microtrack is at m-audio.com. all three of those are going to give you some decent recordings, especially when you pair them up with a good set of binaural microphones. So now you have this recording either on your cassette tape or your digital recorder. If you have it on a digital recorder, there is usually a USB port on the recorder or a memory card that you can remove, put it into your flash card reader. Or if you plug in to the USB port, these devices will usually show up as a drive. You find the file that you recorded and bring it over to your PC. You may wish to edit that file. There's many sound editing programs. I guess I would have to recommend the one that APH makes is the most accessible recorder and easy to get going with. That one is called Studio Recorder. Good boy, little buddy. Some other choices you have, though, are Sony's SoundForge. And there's one called Goldwave that's much less expensive, probably a little less capable. And there's WavePad is another one that will do some decent editing for you. I suggest really you Google for digital audio recording software, maybe, and you should come up with some good hits with that. You'll probably want to do some things like normalizing or increasing the volume, editing out parts of a recording that you messed up on or that you just want to fine-tune a little bit. You may want to paste in beginnings and endings to your shows or so forth. So there's a lot of things you can do with a digital recorder. The main thing is getting that file from your PC, from your digital recorder to your PC. Now, once you've edited the file and you have it ready for distribution, and we won't even talk about what makes up content. That's a whole nother topic, whether you have something to say or not. And there's good tips for how to come up with content. I recommend, there's actually a good book for you U.S. citizens in Bookshare. Just search in there for podcast, and I believe it's one of the O'Reilly series books that's got some very good information in it about reading and creating podcasts. There's also a good one on Amazon.com that's available in electronic format. That's a protected PDF file, but it still reads okay. It reads quite well, in fact. The first thing you want to do is, make sure that you're really talking about something you know about and that you enjoy. And that will, by all accounts, make your podcasts more interesting to other people. So once you figure out that you have some content and you have recorded and edited it, it's time now to move that content to some place where other people can have access to it. And there's several ways you can do that. Just as there are a number of ways to listen to podcasts or create them, there's also a good many ways on how to distribute them. Probably for a beginner, a couple of the easier ways are to use one of the commercial services for distributing casts. Libsyn.com, L-I-B-S-Y-N for Liberated Syndication, is by all accounts a very good one to get started with, and you are charged monthly by the amount of material that people download. So the amount of material you distribute, the size of your files, will determine your monthly rate. For most people getting started, I don't know the exact rates, but I do believe it's less than $10 a month for, you know, a reasonable size file that you can distribute to a reasonable number of people. Libsyn.com does have all the information there about exact numbers, so you may want to check that out and make sure that that's going to meet with your needs. Since a podcast is essentially a blog with audio content, many of the blog software services or blog services also work with audio files. Now, when you go this route, you have to have a place to host. You have to have a server on which to store your audio content. One recommendation I can make that I had very good success with was OurMedia.org. OurMedia.org. And they have a service in conjunction with archive.org that provides you free hosting and distribution. These are files you essentially you can set your distribution licenses on the page, but archive.org's whole goal is to preserve digital media, and they heavily promote the Creative Commons distribution method, which I won't get into all the details of that, partially because I don't know them as well as I should. Good boy. Up, up. And partially we just don't have time to cover all that information. But the way this would work is that your podcast would be two separate steps. Good boy, phone. That's it. First, you would upload your content to OurMedia.org. And in order to do that, OurMedia does provide you with a tool called the OurMedia Publisher. And it allows you to upload your file, give it a name, and describe it, and so forth. And then you can use the URL that it gives back to you as a link in your blog for people to download the audio. Excuse me. And I used that service for probably about 6 months, and it wasn't the best for me because of the amount of content that I was putting up there, and at least I never figured out a real automated way to get content up there and know what the URL was for it without having to hand upload everything. So be aware, you know, this is a process. It's the OurMedia program is accessible. It takes a little getting used to. It's a little funny at first, but once you've tried it a time or two, you kind of learn to get around all its little quirks and nuances. And it actually works very well with both JAWS and Window Eyes, and I presume now. Now, if you're doing the blog route, where you've signed up for something like LiveJournal or one of the other blogger services, most of them will allow you to include an HTML href tag, which refers to the location of your media file. So that tag looks like href equals quote, and then the URL to your media file, close quote greater than, and then the anchor text of what you want to put in to show up on your blog that people will click on. So you could just say listen now, and then > a > to close out the tag. So, excuse me for the branches hitting the microphone there. I really am going to have to bring my trimmers in tomorrow. So, if your tag turned out to be rmedia.org/, and usually I believe turns out to be something like your name and then the author's name and the podcast, but it'll give it to you. When you upload the file, you'll get a URL that you can use to link to. So it might be http://archive.org/lscootcon, you know, and then whatever the author of the podcast name is, and then the name of the file. So that'd be what you'd put inside your quotes on your href tag. And the blogging software will automatically create a link for you from that href tag. So that's a second option about ways that you can have a podcast through a blog. Now, a third way is by using blogging software that you run on your own server instead of subscribing to LiveJournal or Blogger.com. You can download. I think people are really calling them content management systems, and there are several. Two of them that I've looked at that look really good are Drupal, Drupal, and they are at drupal.org, and WordPress, and they're at wordpress.org, all one word, of course. Now, these two do require you to copy files over to your server. You would go to an ISP that lets you set up a web page. In my particular case, I've selected GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com. Selected domain name and set up a web page. Now, in addition to, let me finish this discussion of WordPress. So you download WordPress or Drupal, and follow the instructions on how to install it, which usually involves setting up a configuration file, setting up a database on your ISP's server, and copying the files over to the server and running it. They provide a lot of good features. We're really thinking about switching over to Drupal or WordPress for Blind Cool Tech, but before I go into all the details of that, I want to tell you yet another way to create podcasts, and this is the one that we started out with on Blind Cool Tech. I definitely do not recommend this for everyone, but we happen to have some code around and some scripts that I was very easily, let's go straight, good boy, hey, very easily able to adapt to creating a web page and an RSS feed. And by the way, those blogging services and the WordPress and Drupal, and there's several other content management systems. They all provide automatic generation of RSS feeds, and so does rmedia, by the way. You can actually distribute the RSS tag for your space on rmedia, the URL for the RSS, that is, that rmedia creates each time you upload content, and you don't even have to worry about that. But what we did originally was the hand-built way. So we wrote a script basically that accesses a database and generates the web page and the RSS feed from this information in the database. Now, for those of you that do want to do it by hand, you can actually sit there and write it in Notepad if you want. Just load up any podcast feed, any RSS file. You can look at ours at blindcooltech.com/bct, blindcooltech.xml. And you'll notice that every feed has characteristics, and these are a channel tag that represents the feed, and then for each episode in the podcast, there is an item tag, and of course, being that this is XML, each of these tags is properly closed. Within the item tag, though, or between the item tag and its closing tag, are a number of other tags, which include publication date, title of the episode, the author, a globally unique identifier, which apparently is optional, and an enclosure tag that provides that same URL for your content that we talked about earlier that you would use in the href tag for your blog. Now let's make a distinction here. The blog part, the website part of your podcast, you really don't need that. That is merely for people to look at your web page and be able to download your podcast without having to subscribe to the feed. Now, this actually will become a little bit easier when Internet 7 is under regular distribution, because you can open an RSS or a feed, podcast feed, in IE7, and it will show you the components of that feed. Earlier ones, it just showed you the source code to it with all the raw tags and everything. And if you want to see that, you can still do that. Just go to your view menu in Internet Explorer and hit source. But the nice thing about the way IE7 is doing these feeds now is that if a person does load up one of those feeds into their browser, they'll at least see something sensible and not a bunch of goggledygook like all the tags. But just as importantly, there'll also be a link for each enclosure tag in there, so that the person who's viewing this can actually download and listen to your content without actually having to set up a podcatcher and subscribing to feeds. So again, in theory, you don't even need a web page. You really just need a feed. And if you go the rmedia route, you know, that service actually automatically generates your feed, so you may have nothing else to do. Now, we can also talk about other services like FeedBurner. And what FeedBurner does for you, you don't need FeedBurner, by the way, but what FeedBurner does is it gives you some tracking capabilities on your feeds, and it massages them a little for other applications. So there's some special iTunes tags, for instance, that FeedBurner will add to your feed to make it more compatible with iTunes. And you can check out FeedBurner, by the way, by going to feedburner.com. That's FeedBurner.com. Again, you can go into FeedBurner, set up multiple feeds if you want for each account you have on FeedBurner. This so far is a free service as well. And another nice thing about it is you can create a name for your feed that's a little bit easier to pass out to people. So your feed's address could be feeds.feedburner.com/mypodcast. And that's a little bit easier to remember than rmedia.org/lscootcon/68432.xml. Unless you happen to get lucky and really get an easy number to remember there. But yeah, check out Feeds. It also has a feed validator. So one of the things that's easy to do with a feed is to break it, especially if you decide to try to do one of them by hand. So, you know, if you don't have a closing tag or if you have illegal characters in there, that can really cause you some problems. I hope this has given you a general overview of the kinds of things that you need to do to set up a podcast, from the recording to the hosting to the uploading. Most of the time, if you're going to be uploading these large files, it makes sense as well to invest in a good FTP client. Of course, if you're using rmedia, you just use their tool to upload your content. But with any of the other solutions, you can use Internet Explorer's FTP features, and maybe they'll be a little better in 7. But I found it to be worth the $30 or $40 or $50 price tag, depending on how much content you're going to serve up, to go ahead and invest in an FTP client. One of my favorites is one called WebDrive. And the thing I like about it is that it allows you to map a remote FTP site to a local drive letter. So you can just use your normal Windows or DOS commands to copy or manipulate the files. I mean, it's literally, you can edit directly off your site or set up batch files that you could keep a local copy on your site and just transfer any changed material over to the new one. So I highly recommend that you check out WebDrive. And let's summarize the list of software things that you need to look at. So you obviously need to have sound playback software. If you're going to create podcasts, you need some sound editing software and a way to record your content. Of course, we didn't even discuss recording directly on your PC, which you can also do. Many of the USB microphones do a very admirable job at fairly high quality recording. The sad fact is, most of the sound cards on today's PCs are really cheapos. And going through the USB port kind of almost gives you an extra sound card for free. There was a review a few weeks ago on Blind Cool Tech about the Radio Shack TSO microphone. It's only $12 and really makes a good recording, so consider something like that. Don't even consider using the built-in speaker microphones on your laptop. They're 98% of the time, I don't know why they even put them on there. They're very, very poor quality. So the other software, just to review, is an FTP client, some kind of blogging software. You may want to get an MP3 tag editor. One of the things that's very important to many MP3 players is to have tags in your file that describe the content along with the author and the name of the show. And that's what shows up on the display of like an iPod, or actually several MP3 players rather than the file name. So, I hope this has helped you out with the production part of your podcast. I will be here for questions afterwards, so feel free to stick around and let's talk about them. That is, if you're listening to this on June 19th through the Talking Communities. If you've been listening on Blind Cool Tech, you'll just have to wait till the 19th. Or you can always contact us with these numbers or email addresses that we provide at the end of the show. That is going to do it for this edition of this joint edition from Talking Communities and Blind Cool Tech of How to Produce a Podcast. I'm Larry Skutkan here with my trusty sidekick, Jake. We'll talk to y'all again later. Real soon, I hope, in fact. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Blind Cool Tech. Visit us on the web at blindcooltech.com. Our email address is blindcooltech@gmail.com, and our comment line is 206-984-9203.
Good boys. You gonna roll around on the floor, Jake?